Thanks for listening to the Fly Racing Racer X podcast. I want to give a shout out to Racetech, racetech.com. Tell them you listen to Pulp. You'll save money. Pulp24, code to save, racetech.com. Thank you to those guys. Suspension done right. Motors, too. Racetech.
A Pulp MX Network production.
Welcome to the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show, presented by Maxxis Tires, Renthal, and Motorsport.com on RacerXOnline.com. With your continuing gracious support of our sponsors, we're thriving at over 1,800 podcasts delivered with over 20 million downloads. Click the Amazon banner on Pulp MX to help us out. Donate via Patreon if it suits you. And as always, enrich your moto lifestyle by working with the sponsors who support us. The original Moto Podcast, featuring legends of the past, stars of today, season previews, race reviews, introspection, opinion, facts, and laughs. Here's the voice bringing it all to you, Steve Mathis.
Say that dedication to your frustration.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Fly Racing Racer X podcast. Thanks for listening, man. Appreciate it. Don't forget to check out those archives. Lots of great stuff in there with lots of riders and lots of people over the years. So if you haven't ever heard your story from your favorite rider or your industry person, go through the archives. Lots there. Like I said, go to pulpmex.com, go through the podcast tab, and just scroll away, man. You'll have a lot of fun. So thank you to the folks listening. Thank you to Fly Racing, 25 years of Fly Formula helmet. The Formula S helmet could save your life. It's a helmet with a brain. The regular Formula helmet, I mean, it's got a super safe lining. It's got the Rion technology in it. It's quiet. It's lightweight. Really great helmet from the folks at Fly Racing. Evo gear, top of the line Evo gear. It's got the BOA closure system on it. Fits well, stretches in all the right places. Lots of colors to choose from, and lots of sizes as well. So thanks to the folks at Fly Racing, flyracing.com. For all that they do, you look at Dean Wilson, Max Anstey, RJ Hampshire, so many riders wearing Fly Racing out there week to week in Supercross and Motocross. They support the Supercross series as well. So thank you to the folks at Fly. If you haven't checked them out for a while, lean into it, man. Appreciate it. Maxxis Tires as well. Talking about not checking out in a while. Maxxis has got some new release tires. I just did a podcast with Mitchell Harrison. Talked about how much he was surprised at the new Maxxis tires. So if you haven't thought about Maxxis for a while, well, look at their soft intermediate to hard terrain tires. Maxxis.com for more information. Developed by some guy named Jeremy McGrath. I think he's pretty good and kind of knows what he's doing. So thank you to folks at Maxxis Tires. Great mountain bike tires as well. Renthal. Renthal.com. Made over there in the UK. Factory Honda, Kawasaki, KTM, using Renthal, and whether it's chains, bars, sprockets, they've got you covered. They got a really cool bar fit, works fit tool on their website. They have a dealer inventory located as well for the USA, so you can see what your local dealer has in stock. Renthal.com, new and exciting things coming from those guys down the line too, like I think maybe another month or so. Renthal.com, you know the name, you know the products they make. So thank you to those guys. We'll tell you more about motorsport.com later, but it's the number one online retailer to get your OEM parts or aftermarket parts. So thank you to those guys for making this podcast happen. Thank you, you people, for listening. Check out the archives. Check out the LVK podcast. Check out the Re-Raceables. Lots of things going on. PulpMX.com to read some cool stories from Kiefer and Tony Blazer and more. So yeah, just promoting some of my crap. All right. Thanks for listening. All right. On to the show. All right, everybody. Now, as promised on the Fly Racing Racer X podcast, a really, really good guy in the sport. He's been a racer, a team owner for a long time, and I love catching up to him whenever I can. But this one's done via long distance down in New Zealand. Josh Coppins, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for doing this, man. I appreciate it. How's things going? How's everything?
Life's good. Life's busy. There's a lot happening, but yeah, I can't complain.
Looks like you're a bit of a mini dad now.
Yep, yep. I'm heading in that direction, and reluctantly, but yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah, we saw BT over here with his kid as well, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you guys get together and just shake your head and wonder what happened to the time and what's been going on?
Yeah, so we do a little bit, but I'm heavily involved with that, with Ben's side of things, with the Yamaha. Ben works for us on a number of activations we have within the Yamaha group here. So yeah, I'm heavily involved with that as well.
And how many rounds are there in New Zealand Moto?
We have a 4-round championship, but we have 7 contracted races that runs from October till end of March, start of April. And yeah, 4 of them are for our championship, but we have a 3 other additional kind of pre-season races that are okay. Part of our contract as well.
And how long have you been running the team for?
I started the team in 2012, straight after I retired from professional racing. So yeah. Been going 10 years now.
Oh, okay. And, you know, I did a podcast with Dak not that long ago. About, yeah. I mean, he's been around a little while longer than you, but, you know, he had a great career just like you. And, yeah. And in talking about it, he was saying, like, the day-to-day management and the running of the team, that his pro career – seems so long ago. It's so in the rearview mirror for him that, you know, because he's got his business hat on, right? And he's got his team owner hat on. And obviously the gap when he hung it up to when you is less. But is it the same way for you where you're just like, you're like just team owner, businessman now?
Yeah, yeah, it does. It seems like another life, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And I remember I rode for Michele Rinaldi, and I'm a bit of a geek when it comes to the sport. I just, yeah. I like speaking to those types of people, and he was obviously a world champion. And mm-hmm. I said to Michele, I said, you know, let's talk about your career, you know, how was it? And, you know, what did you like and not like? And he said, Josh, it seems like another life. I don't even really think about it anymore. And I was like, what?
Yeah. At the time you were like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. But, then I happened to ride for Craig Dak for 2 years on my time down from when I sort of I called it stepping down from Europe to Craig and then retirement. And yeah, same thing. You know, I spent a lot of time with Dakar, got so much respect for him. I really try to emulate a lot of what he does in the team here. And in my opinion, he has one of the, if not the most successful teams. And what I mean by that is not only as results, but also financially, also, you know, how he's very commercial. So I follow a lot of what he does and still work closely with him now.
You know, Rinaldi, I talked to him a few times because he would come to the States, and then when we went over there, he was sort of our liaison, right, for the Diz Nations and stuff when I was a mechanic. And he won the world championship when Corrado Motti broke his leg in practice, right?
That's right. I rode for Corrado as well.
Oh, did you really? Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Okay. So I was asking him about that, and it's like I was asking a stranger. He's like, yeah. Like, I was like, that must have been just, what were you thinking? And like, like kind of what you said, he was not going to really talk about his racing days. He wasn't interested.
No, not at all. Not at all. And then I couldn't really ask Corrado because he doesn't really speak that much English. Okay. He didn't when I rode for him. Yeah, so I didn't really get to ask him much either.
How much do you and Dak communicate, talk weekly, monthly, talk about the bikes, talk about testing, talk about Yamaha itself? Like, you're the New Zealand Yamaha team and he's the Australian team. Or is there maybe competition there? I don't know. Like, how often do you guys talk to each other?
Not as much as we should.
Okay.
But we certainly follow each other really closely in terms of social media and what's happening. And my boss is the same as his boss. So, you know, basically New Zealand is like another state to Australia. So I have a boss in New Zealand, but I have my main boss is Australasia, who's Craig's boss as well. So I'm always in contact and always know what's going on. We do talk regularly. When we catch up, it's like we haven't really ever been apart.
You know,
I've got a lot of time for him, and I used to stay with him when I rode for him and managed to win a championship for him. And yeah, the relationship's good, but we should talk more often, but we're just busy. So, unfortunately it doesn't happen.
How much do you, obviously for years you were a test rider for Yamaha, like in the early days of that backwards motor, you had a lot to do with it. You were helping out. Is that still something you do, or as you get older, those days are over? Or like, how much are you riding and testing are you doing, if at all?
I'm still riding occasionally. I would like to ride more, but unfortunately my job role's changed and I'm more and more in the office. But I am still riding and I am still testing, and I do a little bit with the guys from Yamaha US, but not a lot. Only on certain models. I get to come up there and work with Travis and those guys, and As much as I can, mm-hmm. but it's not a huge amount, maybe twice a year.
Okay. Yep. Interesting. And so also with your team and with your riders, and I want to talk about Jed Beaton here for a little bit, but do mm-hmm. are you helping them with technique and riding and training, or is it again like I'm a businessman, I got to run my team? Like, how involved are you on that end of things as far as like actual, like, hey man, take this line in this turn, or hey, let's go on a bicycle ride, or what did you do? Like, how much involvement is that for you?
So in terms of the team, I'm working on the business model, parts, budgets, contracts, mm-hmm. Bikes, and additional sponsorship.
Yep.
And then in terms of the riding, Ben Townley looks after the riders in that case, more so because he's logistically a lot closer to the riders. So he's more technique, training. We have a group chat with each rider, understand where they're going, what they're doing, what the program is, and quite often Ben will join them. And then I'm more only at the races and then in the office.
Ah, okay. So it's a little bit like you're a little more removed than you were, right?
Yeah, that's right. So how that all came about was originally 2012, I started just running the motocross team. Mm-hmm. And I quickly understood that financially that wasn't going to work. So I took on more of a job role with Yamaha, and now I'm motorsport manager for New Zealand. So I look after all racing activities.
Got it.
So road, GNCC, junior racing, and some marketing activities such as adventure riding.
Yep.
And I have different guys running those segments, and I'm more the sort of in the office making sure they've got what they need from Yamaha's side.
Interesting. I'm good friends with Travis Preston, obviously, and I've gotten to know him well over the years, either when he was racing or now. Like, I'm a bit of a Yamaha influencer, let's say. I get a bike and I get to promote the brand and all of that. And I love picking Travis's brain on the bike. And then Kiefer, you know, Kiefer and I and Preston all go back and forth. Kiefer's a way better rider, way better tester than I'll ever be. But, you know, it's just funny to – like, Travis has such a role in this new model, right? 2023, I think, was really his.
Yes.
And then Kiefer is talking about the clutch or whatever, and Travis is getting mad. And, like, it's really funny to watch Travis, who, you know, is his baby a little bit, and then him and Kiefer go back and forth. I love it. It's really interesting stuff, talking about what Travis thinks the bike does well and what Kiefer does, and then they battle. It's great stuff, Josh. I love it.
Yeah, it is. It is. So I listen to I do a lot of traveling, so I pretty much listen to all your podcasts, and I follow it closely. And knowing Travis in the testing role, that when I'm working with him, I see he puts his heart and soul into the bike. And obviously Kiefer comes at it from a slightly different angle, and I appreciate that. So, yeah, it's interesting. It's important for me to understand what those you know, pros and cons are as well, because at the end of the day, I'm partly involved, not with that model, but with other models. So yeah, it's interesting to follow.
Just the you know, the development of a motorcycle and the settings, and I mean, Kiefer's doing it with Triumph now, right? So, he's got that end of things going on. It is so interesting to me to listen to these guys and then see the baby come out, you know, and all this.
Yeah.
Man, it started around 2018-19 in my opinion, but the backwards motor YZ450 from, you know, the James Stewart days to right now, I mean, it took a little while, but they got it right.
Yeah, they have a good group there now. They have you know, under Steve Butler and Travis and Steve, the other Steve, they have a really good test team. Mm-hmm. They're very passionate, they have a clear understanding of what they need to do, and they work hard and just do a good job. I'm not saying the others don't, but they certainly have a good understanding, and you see that in the shootouts. So they have a good understanding of what the customer wants, and in my opinion, do a great job.
Yeah, and they're reliable, right? They're really reliable, and they got the hydraulic clutch option now that bolts right in, and yeah, it's a really really neat program they've got, and they've really elevated it. So I just love it. Interesting, because Travis will be like, Kiefer will be like, you know, the front end, why'd you guys move the front end in? I don't like it. Like, and Travis is like, no, man, it's more stable this way. And Kiefer's like, no. And then they start yelling at each other. And I love it. So,
yeah. So obviously, my opinion is that, you know, Keith is looking for some stability of the previous model, and but he still wants that luxury of the nice turning and the lightweight feel of the new one, and that's hard to do, right? And I'm sure Travis is trying, and so is every manufacturer. So he'll get there. I'm sure there's things to come, and won't be too long. And I'm sure Keith will be happy too.
I'd like to see, just on my vet B riding ability, Josh, I'd like to see the bike have this year's layout, this year's turning, you know, 23 turning, 23, 24 turning, 23, 24 layout, all of that with a little bit more grunt of the older motor.
I agree.
Because they lost some of that tractability a little bit of the old motor that was so good, you know?
So you want to be able to do those third gear turns.
Yeah, because I'm lazy and I'm fat and, you know.
Yeah, so. I'm the same. I want that third gear turn too. So, I'm pretty sure that they'll fine tune it and it'll only get better from here. And it's a good platform to start with, but I'm sure they'll get there.
One of the big backers of your team over the years is Altherm Window Systems, and that's
correct.
The title sponsor, and they've been with you
correct.
Forever. Who are they, and what's their passion and motto, and how are they finding sponsorship of your team all these years? Like, how do they like it?
So it's an interesting question, and I hear you talking about sponsorship in the US a lot, and for teams and whatnot, and I actually met them through a friend. And he introduced me, and it was one of those deals where you think, is this going to be a waste of time? Probably. Mm-hmm. And it was about 6 months after starting the team, and I landed a really, really good title sponsor. Problem, but turns out that I was right place, right time, and managed to get in contact with a great company. And it's not that easy. I haven't managed to replicate it again. Been together for 10 years, and they're involved in a lot of sports, generally more so at the federation level. So hockey, rugby, netball, rowing, Olympic sports, and are more involved at the federation level, and it filters all the way down. We're one of the few sort of independent teams that they sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really passionate about kids in sport. And I work really hard with it. And unfortunately, I'd like to tell you that they love racing and that racing does enough to justify the investment, but it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm actually heading off shortly on a trip. I've got a school visit and some coaching classes where kids, we started a school visit program called Dream Big, which is about inspiring kids to be good at sport. And we take a few motorbikes and some riders along, and basically we've got to work hard, just like any sponsorship.
Yeah.
And they're passionate about kids and sport, and that's what I've got to go along and do. So I think they would probably sponsor me just to do that. The racing is a byproduct, even though the even though the racing takes all the money. It's a good relationship, and I've just finished a 3-year deal, and we're in negotiations to extend, and it's looking really good.
You know, part of Larry Brooks's San Manuel deal with James and Chad and all that was going back to native kids and going to talk to them and going to put on clinics and trying to inspire the kids to, you know, live life right and get on, you know, get involved in sports and all of that. And the casino tribe was as much important as the racing results for him, you know?
Exactly the same as me.
Yeah.
Exactly the same. You know, mental health is such a big thing now, and getting kids on the right path, and they want to do their part. And I admire that. And look, Steve, I'll do whatever it takes in order to make it work. So if they say go there, I go there. Simple as that.
And it's commercial windows or residential windows, or like, is it?
Both.
Okay,
both.
Everything.
Both. Yeah. They're actually 4 window companies. Altherm is just one part, and they also do the glass as well, and they've been involved in some rally cars and jet sprints and jet boats, and they're also involved in sailing and horses and all sorts of stuff. It's a big company, it's family owned, and I'm very thankful for their support.
Nice, that's good. You've got Jed Beaton riding for you right now. As from what I understand, he's got an Australian ride, but you're using him for a little bit. He's fresh off the MXGPs, of course. He had some bad luck there. How'd that come together, and how's it been?
So So we have a rider called Maximus Purvis. He was the current MX1 champion here. He's a New Zealand boy, and he got injured. He injured his knee, so he was out for 9 months. Mm-hmm. And so I contacted Craig Dack. I knew he had signed Jed Beaton, and he was on a motocross-only deal previously with Yuriev Konski.
Yep.
And I knew he hadn't done a lot of racing, and I saw New Zealand as a platform to get him prepared and used to the new Yamaha, but also prepared for the Australian Championship, mm-hmm. and also help us get some coverage while our rider was injured. And that's what we've done. And I did a deal together with Craig and Craig Dack and Jed, and mm-hmm. we're sort of spreading him across both championships. It's been a little bit challenging in terms of he lives in Australia and just turns up and races here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in my experience, in my opinion, the work with the riders is done Monday to Friday. By the time we hit the track on Saturday and Sunday, if they're not ready, there's not a lot I can do at that point.
Yeah.
So in terms of working with him Monday to Friday has been a little bit tricky, and he's made a few mistakes. But in terms of speed and professionalism, he's been awesome to deal with, and mm-hmm. and I've really enjoyed it, and I think he has as well.
Yeah, it's man. He had he had some really good MX2 results, and mm-hmm. just injuries, and you know, I mean, you can relate as far as that goes. He never really reached his potential, and I guess now does he want to go back to MXGP? Is that the goal, to build himself back up, or in talking to him, he's happy with what he's doing?
I think he's pretty happy with what he's doing. He's got a 2-year deal with Yamaha, mm-hmm. and he's a good guy. He's got good speed, and he's got a good contract. So it's always hard to move away from that, right?
Yeah.
And rebuild yourself when he's at that age now where he's got a partner and he's looking to mm-hmm. put some roots down, and I respect that, and unless the right deal came along, which is unlikely, I don't see him returning, but I could be wrong.
What's the state of New Zealand and even Aussie motocross, if you can, as much as you know about that? I feel like it mirrors Canada a little bit, and they're still coming out of COVID stuff, man. And you guys were even gnarlier with that, and the series took a hit in up north, and they're trying. What's it like for down under there?
So Australia is doing really well. Record numbers at their first round a few weeks ago.
Okay.
Championship's looking good. You've got Yuriev and Craig as sort of the spearheading the championships. And you know, when they are so professional like they are, it brings riders up and brings the championship up. So Australia is doing very good. In terms of New Zealand, we're much more, unfortunately, like Canada. We're on a rebound. We certainly took a hit. It's certainly quite low at the moment. We're on a rebound, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's one of those things, right? Like this, the sponsors go away, they don't come back, and crowds lose interest or whatever. Like, yeah, Canadian stuff is, these guys are struggling.
Yeah, there's so much to do in life, and you know, you've got to really keep your foot on the throttle, otherwise it goes south pretty quick. And when you pull back and people get other interests and move into doing other things, and unfortunately we've lost all those areas you just said, so mm-hmm. trying to get it back's not easy.
Right, for sure. Any interest for you in World Supercross? Did you apply? Did you talk to Adam? You know, Dax obviously involved in it, Yuriev is. And what about on your end of things?
No, none at all.
Okay.
So I did a short stint with Courtney Duncan in World Women's Motocross, maybe 2 years, and she came through the JCR program, and we took her to Europe and sort of got her going. And I quickly realized that I didn't really want to be back there, and I didn't want to be there unless the deal was right. And what I mean by that is if Yamaha want me to do it, I believe I can do a good job, but I'm not paying for it. So that's basically what happened. Mm-hmm. And I came back and put my feet down here and just concentrated on what I was doing here. It was very hard to fund an international program from your domestic series.
Yeah.
And I think some of those guys are finding that. So it's not easy because international requirements requires international funding, and that's hard to get. So that, I know women's motocross is completely different, but it was just a small version of what World Supercross was. So unless I had someone that was going to fund it, I wasn't interested. And I know they had that program, but I just thought I'd sit back and watch a little bit. And I'm happy with life in New Zealand as well. So that was the other reason.
It does seem like the money was paid the first year, and now there's probably some not as much money going and negotiations going, and it's going to be interesting in year three on who stays and who goes, you know?
Yeah. I think we're all watching that pretty closely, and, hey, I hope it works out. I hope they sort of, you know, I think we all do for the sport, and I hope they are able to start going to some of those countries that want to see racing and can rebuild it. But it's certainly gonna be tough.
You mentioned, you know, you listen to the podcast, you're a fan, right? I've always found you very, very into the sport at all levels and all of that. So right now, like, when you look for results, are you an MXGP guy? Are you AMA, Motocross, Supercross? Are you both? Like, where's your level of interest in other series?
Watch everything. Maybe I generally just watch the highlights package from MXGP and Supercross. I tend to watch, especially at the moment while it's so exciting, I watch the whole lot. Motocross, I start out watching the whole lot and then normally end up on just the highlights. It just depends how busy I am.
Okay. All right. Interesting to get your thoughts on it. This Jet Lawrence kid, not too shabby. I don't know if you know Dazzy from back in the day before they went to Europe or not, but look, he's five championships in a row. Everybody knows what he's doing as we record this podcast. It's still surprising to me, though, Josh, what he's doing.
Yeah, it is to me too, but I expected him to do well. I worked a little bit with Hunter when Jet was still young. And Hunter spent a bit of time here in New Zealand with us, only a very small period before he went off to Europe. And I spoke with Dazza in that period. And, yeah, it's certainly come a long way. And I saw Jet win his first European race. I think he was 14, maybe. I knew something was special, but not the special.
Yeah. And what's your take on Sexton from afar? You've been there as a top guy that switches brands. We debated this last night on the Pulp MX show with Nicoletti and who was in. And, I mean, we all kind of said, like, you know, Chase didn't forget out a ride, and we're kind of thinking it's the switch to KTM. And Chase told us on our show a couple weeks ago that he underestimated the switch from aluminum to a steel frame bike. What do you think?
Yeah, it's certainly tough when you're so in tune with this particular motorcycle, especially in his case. It's been Honda for so long, and going Austrian is probably the biggest step. You know, we have riders come from Austrian to us, and it takes time, and it's not easy, but I think he's doing quite well. You know, in terms of he's starting well. The last few weeks, he started to look a lot better. And you've got to remember, he's coming up. We just talked about the guy he's coming up against who's not too bad, and everyone's trying hard. Everyone's putting in a huge amount of effort. And, yeah, it's just a big step from Japanese to Austrian, and he'll come around.
Yeah. Do you think he'll get it back? I do.
Sure. I like his attitude, you know, and I like his honesty. And he's frustrated. You can see that. And then I think when that frustration finally sort of gets to the point where he just sort of drops his shoulders and goes, you know, that's what it is, you'll start to see a bit more of the true Chase, I think.
Did you have a bike change that took you a while, then you got it? Then you got back to where you were?
Not really. No, I only did Suzuki, Honda, Yamaha, and that was all pretty close. and it was seamless, and no problem.
Hey, I understand this Cole Davies kid that's on the Gas team once rode for you. He certainly got a future. Like, Daniel Blair is a buddy of mine, and he's on the Orange Brigade program. Daniel's told me, like, he's much better in Supercross than Motocross, which is really weird to see, but. What's your thoughts on Cole Davies?
Yeah, he's a good kid. He's certainly got a lot of talent, and it's nice to see him doing well. Family's put in a lot of effort, and they deserve to do well. I guess knowing that both Ben and I worked really closely with him, and, you know, his weakness is he's been so good, so young, he hasn't been challenged enough. So I guess if I had a concern, the concern would be the tough days and when things don't go his way, understanding how to bounce back And I really liked round two of the Futures because he had to fight for that win. And honestly, he's never had to fight for anything in his career so far because he's been so good.
Oh, really? So he just mopped the floor as a kid?
Yeah. And I even saw last week, I was a little bit frustrated with his ride last week. You know, he got to the first corner and he quickly realized, shit, I don't have the whole shot. You know, he's and then he didn't really handle it that well because he's not used to it. So. Yeah. But that's going to happen all the time soon when he moves up. So that's probably going to be his challenge in terms of ability. He has it. He has plenty of it, and he's certainly got the skill. So there's no problem there. It's just when the going gets tough, is he going to be tough enough to carry on through that? That would be my concern to Will and to Daniel, and I'd tell his dad that all the time. But he certainly hope he does well, and him and the family deserve everything they can get.
So, I guess how do you leave your program, or how did that happen? Where he left?
So I get the hard part for us is trying to retain our Yamaha riders, and we had it with Dylan Walsh, we had it with Jed Beaton, Hunter Lawrence, Courtney Duncan. The list goes on. And my dream or my goal for our team was to help riders reach the elite and get New Zealand with good riders back into Europe and the US. And unfortunately, when you do that and you take those riders on, retaining them within the Yamaha brand is always difficult, because just like I do, Donnie Luce has a program and a development program, and he has young riders coming through, and to find a spot is difficult. And I'm sure Donnie's got lots of guys ringing him up going, hey, I've got this good kid. You know, he's amazing. And can you just fit him in? And I understand it doesn't work like that. So my comments to Cole and the family were, you have to go up there. We purchased some bikes off Yamaha US. Mitch helped out and they did some work on them, and we supplied what we could and the product and what he needed and got him going. And it became obvious that Ben and I were not going to be able to keep this going long term. So I actually mentioned to Ben about Will Hahn, and Will Hahn took him on. And then, of course, Yamaha saw the potential, but by that time Will was already on the front foot. And look, I see it when it becomes professional like that, I'm okay to let them go, because at that point they have to do what's best for them, right? So I'd love to retain them on the MR brand, but it's not easy. So if we can, we do. In this case, we couldn't. And my only comment to them is, when you come back to New Zealand, I'd like to think you'd call me first.
Yeah, no, it's true, right? It's probably a great point.
It's a little bit tricky for Yamaha because they're funding this, and then I say to Yamaha, he's going to move on and we can't retain him. And Yamaha New Zealand has funded the practice bikes, funded the spares, paid the bonus program, and supplied Ben and created this program. So sometimes it's a little bit tricky when we can't retain them, but we, you know, eyes open coming into this, we knew that was probably going to happen.
So why is he better in Supercross than motocross, from what they tell me? Like, how does that make any sense?
So just technically, he is very good, very precise, very good jumper. And then Ben has a full spec Supercross track and spent a lot of time with him working on that. He was full time with Ben training and working on that program for probably 2 years, almost 2 years. And then, there were some ideas to maybe retain him at Star, and then Towers got that right over him. And then ultimately in the end, he just moved on and Ben worked hard with him and got him to a good place. And just naturally, he already has pretty much that skill.
Which kind of takes you back to what you were saying about, like, when you can't be technical, when you get a bad start and you can't just ride your race out front, that's maybe the weakness, right? And but that's also why he's good at Supercross.
He's so good, he's so talented. The hard parts is trying to manage it, and hey, it's a whole nother level. But Jet's in a similar thing, right? He's almost too good, and he's, you know, things are happening to him so fast. And it's a different, but he's got to understand how to manage that as well.
Yeah, he's definitely got some buzz over here. Like, people are impressed, you know. So we'll see how that goes. I guess at some point, Josh, he will be on Team New Zealand with probably a 45-year-old Cody Cooper.
Yeah, that's possible. That is possible.
What is Coop doing? What is old Cody Cooper doing?
It's a good question. He must be coming to the end pretty soon, but he's still well. We're actually six. He's an MX2 rider here now, and we're 6 points in front of him going into the last round of the championship next week. So okay. He might be on the way down, but yeah.
How is he MX2? Well, what is he doing?
Just the way the deal worked out.
Okay. And, yeah.
You know, that was probably that was going to work out better for him.
Right. I think Cody Cooper's going to try to get Leox record, maybe, for MXDNs.
That's going to be tough. I thought I had a lot at 13, but those guys have gone a whole nother level.
Yeah. By the way, too, congrats on New Zealand absolutely whipping Canada's ass at the last MXDN. We completely choked as a country, and you guys did what you did, which is like nobody talked about you, and you got into the A main and, you know, got close to a top 10. So.
Yeah, we did really well, and we were parked opposite Canada, and I felt sorry for them because they put in a lot of effort, but just didn't work, and when it goes bad at Nations, it goes bad.
I wanted to get your take on Prado. He was here, obviously, racing Supercross, and he's almost been perfect in MXGP to start, and people that I know are crediting his Supercross stay with helping him. Now, I was thinking, Josh, he left so late. He only had like a month to prepare. I was obviously wrong. Yet again, I was wrong on that because, you know, he looks better than ever. Do you think, and you've done Supercross, you've did AMA Motocross. Do you think the Supercross thing helped him?
It looks like it, but I was in the same boat as you. I was thinking, man, he's going to struggle to get ready. And then he stayed that extra week. Yeah, and I was thinking, conditions are tough in Europe and are cold and it takes time to adjust. And yeah, I was wrong like you. And it looks like when you see him on the bike, he even looks better. So yeah, every rider's different. Just because that model worked for others and didn't work for others doesn't mean it's not going to for him. And he's certainly got the talent and showed it.
Yeah, he looks impressive, man. And I think we'll see him here next year by all accounts. So
looks like it.
Do you think, I mean, is he on Jet and Sexton's level outdoors in America, like we all think? I mean, do you think he can step in and run that?
Well, I didn't think so, but after Spain, I'm thinking maybe.
Yeah, really, right?
Yeah.
Hey, how often do you, I mean, again, like you talked about, your career is so in the rearview mirror now, and it was a long time ago, and I'm still upset that you hit the fence and lost the world title, by the way. As is Lewis Phillips, too. Lewis Phillips, huge Josh Coppins fan. So
he is.
We're upset about that. But, like, besides that point, you know, we saw you in America here and there. Did you ever get a chance to come here even as a privateer? And do you wish you would have taken that chance? And look, you had a fantastic career. You made a lot of money, won a bunch of MGPs. So it's not like you made the bad choice. But did you ever have a chance?
Yeah, I did. I came over and did Unadilla in 2002, and I borrowed Scott Sheik's neighbor's CR250.
Yep, Plano, right?
And
Plano.
Yeah, and I rode for Plano, and I think I was 6'7" or something like that. And I had a good time, and then there was an opportunity to do West Coast 125 and 250 outdoors for Suzuki. Under Roger,
yeah.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit, and I was sitting second in the 250 MXGPs then behind Pichon.
Okay.
I had one round to go in Russia, and I still had a mathematical chance to win the championship. It was a little bit long, but I still – and Roger said, you have to come over and ride Supercross now. He probably doesn't remember this. And I said, I can't because I've got Russia. And he said, well, if you can't come now, there's no deal. And I thought to myself, yeah. And I thought to myself, well, if I was riding for you and I said I'm going to – and I was, you know, mathematical chance to win a championship and I was going to skip out and go and ride a bike in Europe, I don't think you'd be very happy about it. But if I look back on it now, Steve, my heart wasn't in it. I think he probably knew that at that time. And – I was happy in Europe. I was doing well financially. I wanted to win a world championship. I thought I could win a world championship. And I'd been to America, and I'm a country boy in New Zealand, and California was tough for me. And I was like, you know what? I'm pretty happy here.
I didn't know that. So really, so he had a chance to go test and do something.
And I didn't do it. Didn't even come for the test. And then I think that was around the time also that Motocross the Nations got cancelled. And I think I was going to come out, and then I had to do two trips, and I said, oh, I'll just do it in one trip when I come for the Nations, but that was too late. So then that got cancelled, and then it all just fell over.
Yeah, interesting, right? I do remember you coming to Unadilla. There was like, you know, some low key hype for you, and I thought you rode really well that day. You know,
yeah, no, it went pretty good. Yeah. It was pretty fun. I enjoyed it, and yeah, it was low key, and yeah, had a good time. Used Ben Townley's mechanic. My team in Europe was having some financial troubles, mm-hmm. and I just bought a ticket and come over, and then I had my mechanic couldn't come, so yeah, I borrowed Ben's mechanic and flew over.
What do you remember from your supercrosses that you did earlier that year? How'd they go?
Not great. I arrived on New Year's Eve, and uh-huh. I went to a party in Newport Beach. And the next day, I picked up my bike from Honda, and then I drove to Mitch's and said, I want to race Anaheim. I hadn't even ridden supercross. And he said, what, this Anaheim won?
Like in 4 days?
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, can you do it? And I was so naive, like, man, he had so much to do, not let alone nothing for me. I was nobody. And to his credit, and I'll never forget it, he helped me out. He built a bike and I went to Anaheim. And when I rode onto the track at Anaheim was the first day I rode supercross.
What?
Yeah.
You didn't practice anywhere?
Nope.
Like,
nope. No, didn't practice, and I didn't qualify either. But then I practiced that week at Lake Elsinore, and then I did okay in San Diego. It was like a holiday. I had a fun mover. I had all my friends with me, and probably not the right way to go about it.
Now, probably not. it was neat to see you here. I kind of feel like, what year was that?
Oh, two.
Yep. Were you winning GPs by then? I feel like you weren't. You weren't fully.
No, I started winning in 2003.
Okay, yeah. That's kind of when I remember that it was the next step for you, right? So you got better after that. Not that it helped you, but I'm saying like you kind of reached your prime after that part. Yeah.
Yeah, I was a late bloomer. I wasn't a good rider when I was younger. I mean, I was good here, but that's not good. And then I turned up. It took a long time to learn, and I probably wouldn't survive in today's environment. You've got to be good so young, and I sort of took me a long time to ride to my potential. I was on my own. I was struggling financially. It was more about survival. Mm-hmm. I was leaving the track thinking, do I have enough money to get to the next race, rather than leaving the track thinking, where was I good? Why? Where was I bad? Why? What do I need to work on this week? It was none of that. So I spent the first 3 or 4 years just treading water, not showing my potential, and almost didn't go back. And then, finally, once I matured, I started to sort of handle that pressure of day-to-day living and then started to ride to my potential and come good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting, right? How it kind of came together.
Certainly wasn't talented. I didn't have really any skill. I had a bad technique. I just worked hard and never gave up and kept working and kept grinding and managed to do okay.
I'd love to see a video of you at Anaheim first practice.
You don't.
Okay, let's try this.
And I had a stock CR125 here in New Zealand, and I was riding motocross, and then I flew over, and Mitch built me this thing, and it was a rocket compared to a stocker.
Yeah.
I was like,
O2 Hondas were not good.
I nearly looped it out. I was like, man. And I'd never really raced a 125, right? I was coming from 250 GPs. It was a good time. I enjoyed it, but certainly didn't ride very well.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's funny. I definitely remember you riding I remember Phoenix. I don't know why. Did you get a start in Phoenix? Did you get a start in a heat in Phoenix? I don't remember exactly, but I remember you at Phoenix.
I had a big crash.
Oh, was that it?
On the quad after the triple where Pingree snapped his bike in half.
Oh, okay.
I didn't really know what I was doing. So I was like, they were jumping it, and I'm like, well, if they're jumping it, I'll jump it. And I just didn't hit it fast enough. I didn't really know came up short. But it was still made the main and raced. It was okay.
Yeah, absolutely, right? Hey, like, there's lots of stories, like, and this is more Rattray and Lawrence's and GL, Langston. They, you know, left their countries, South Africa for Rattray and GL and Oz, Australia, and basically, like it sounds like they lived in just, you know, slumlord type of stuff to get and race GPs and to get going and to get money. And I mean, there was some guy that in Belgium that was backing Rattray, you know, kind of believed in him. Did you have that? Like, what was your, like, come to Jesus moment where you're like, I'm leaving the island and I hope it goes well?
Yeah, so I know the Rattray and that team was Tanel Leok, Ben Townley and Tyler Rattray and the guy who ran that team. And that was the start of kind of development teams for brands.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went over, it was strictly factory and privateer.
Okay.
There was no real sort of in the middle. You know, there was no junior team, no development team. It was either you were good or you weren't.
Mm-hmm.
So we leased bikes off Sylvain Gabors, and I used the workshop, and my dad paid quite a lot of money, or was a lot of money to me. And he did it. He said, I can do it for 3 years. And I still lived pretty rough, just like those guys did. And then I would make enough money from racing. I'd race 2, 3, 4 times a week. I'd do anything I could to earn money in France. And that's another reason why we leased bikes, because we had unlimited parts, oils, tires, and that would pay my rent and pay the mechanic, and I could survive. And that's how I did it. And then I just worked my way up, and then I became a support rider for the team. Mm-hmm. And then I started to beat the factory guys. And then the next year I got a factory deal. So it took me about 5 years just chipping away, mm-hmm. getting better. And as I said, I didn't really ride to my potential because I was on my own. I went there when I was 17. I'd never seen white people that didn't speak English. And
you probably never saw snow before.
I arrived in Brussels in February in my shorts, and I walked outside and I never felt cold like it. I was like, Jesus. So I just learnt quickly and made a life over there, and that's how it went for me. But
was Sylvain cool? Like, was he great? Like, I've always heard great stories about him. Was he so helpful for you, or was it more like, here's your bikes and parts and see you later?
So, yeah, I guess when he first saw it, it was really just money for the team, right?
Yeah.
So he just saw it as a business opportunity and thought, oh, I'll give this kid a chance.
Right.
I think if you ask Sylvain, he never believed in me. He never thought that I'd achieve what I achieved.
Yeah.
And I don't actually blame him, because I didn't go that well for the first part. But, you know, I always thought he was really hard on me. And because I felt like he could have helped me more, but he just didn't. And in hindsight, that's what made me resilient and made me achieve what I was able to achieve. And I think now, if he looked back on it, he'd sort of look back on it fondly and have a lot of stories, no doubt. I remember stealing fuel off him once.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't afford to go to the race. I was out of money. And stole some bike fuel out of his fuel shed once. So things did get pretty tight there.
Yeah. And was it factory bikes or production stuff? Like
old factory stuff.
Old stuff.
So before they would destroy it, I got to use it.
Okay.
He'd make a little bit of money.
Yep.
And then it would help fund him. I was under Marnik Bervorts and Werner DeWitt, and I just followed Marnik around like a puppy dog and just learnt as much as I could, and he helped me a lot. And then I just got better and better, but it was a slow process.
I always felt like Bervolts was pretty underrated. Like, he had some really good Motocross the Nations rides too, you know?
Yeah, he was good. He, good guy too.
All right, so were you one of those dudes, like, riding Lomel in a winter jacket and winter gloves? Like, just, you know?
Yeah, well, when I'd turn up from New Zealand, it was summer in New Zealand, right?
Yeah.
So then I'd get there and I'd ride every layer on I could. Lomel was a battle. Just took me a long time to learn how to be any good there, and finally, after some years, you'd start to love it.
How often do you see your crash pop up on Instagram, or people send it to you?
Yeah, all the time. I wish I was famous. Thing else, but it comes up all the time.
I see it.
I show my wife, and she freaks out.
It's unfortunate, but like Ricky yelled at me one time after a race when I was Ferry's mechanic.
Yeah.
And got really mad at me and dude, like once a month on Instagram, it just someone DM, you know, it pops up in someone's reels, and there it is, you know.
Yeah.
So same thing with your crash, I'm guessing.
Yeah, exactly. Social media, it always haunts you.
Yeah, exactly. You're just like, yeah, thanks. I don't need to see the worst moment of my life every month, right?
No, it wasn't ideal.
Obviously, that wasn't ideal either. But any other regrets? Like, you know, we talked about the U.S., not coming to the U.S. It sounds like you were perfectly fine with that.
No regrets. You know, like, in all honesty, I probably shouldn't have achieved what I achieved. I wasn't technically very good. I wasn't, you know, I came from the middle of nowhere. I came from an era where I didn't follow any international racing. I didn't even know what it was. I didn't know who any of the riders were. I didn't aspire to be anyone. I just this opportunity come up, so I said, oh, I'll go and have a look. And I guess just being naive got me there, and then being stubborn and working hard got me further than what I probably should have. So I have no regrets. People say to me all the time, oh, you didn't win that world championship, and I had a great career, and I went, you know, raced in 50 odd countries. I managed to earn some decent money. Yeah, life's good. So
yeah.
I can't look back on it and go, it was, you know, any regrets really.
And then
you're going to do things differently. You know, some things I'm not proud of for sure. But ultimately, I mean, we all do stupid stuff, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely, right? And it seems like at the end of your career, like when you rode for DAC and you won a bunch, that was probably a lot of fun, right?
Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah.
I came back. I signed for not a lot of money because I didn't really need it at the time. And my bonuses were really good. Mm-hmm. And, man, at the end of the year, I actually earned really good money. I enjoyed it. The team was professional. And that was a really good stepping stone from Europe back into reality. And I was able to have some tax breaks in Europe, which I didn't get here. So I was able to get my feet on the ground, understand things, because you'd been pretty sheltered for 15 years.
Yeah.
And you know, built a house and had some tracks. I was able to train and race at home for the first time in 15 years and as an adult. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. No, it did seem like a fun time for you. And I don't know how much you were grinding away to do it either. You know what I mean? Like, you were still on your form of a world championship guy, you know? So
yeah, I wasn't really grinding that hard because I had so much base from Europe. So I was, and I had my farm here, kind of like a mini kind of Carmichael's farm. I had tracks, I had my workshop. So it was just fun.
Yeah.
Just riding with my friends and I was earning good money, and I'd fly in, fly out, and Craig Dack's team was super professional, and I had everything I needed. And when I always had in my mind to stop at 35, and I mean, that's a long career, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, you talk about regrets. If I look back now, I could have probably done at least another year if I wanted to. So
yeah, could have earned a little bit more money for your team.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
How much do you talk to see Shane King?
Quite regularly. His kids are riding, so I see him at the races quite regularly. And he has a company that imports some products, and we use some of his products.
Okay.
So yeah, I deal with him regularly.
I was teammates with him at KTM when he came over and did that 1 year, and always liked him. And I see him. He just, you know, he comes to America. He comes to the destinations. I feel like I see Shane King a ton at every races around the world. So, you know,
he's here, there, and everywhere. And he's doing good, and he's got a good business going.
You think about yourself and BT and King and even Daryl. I mean, you guys are the smallest island, and you just produce these, and maybe Davies, is the next one. You guys just produce these riders, you know, it's really incredible.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. I hope to, we've had a bit of a lull, and I'm hoping that we've got some coming up. BT's got two kids that are really good, and Cole Davies, and we've got some others doing well in Australia, and Courtney Duncan's doing good in Europe. So yeah, I feel like we're on the way up again, and hopefully off the back of our program, we can put some riders in there to do well.
Yeah. It's like one of those things, like it just seems like there's always someone good from New Zealand. Like you said, a little bit of a lull, but now this Davies kid is attracting some attention, and it's just, it's always someone from New Zealand, you know?
Yeah. We have a small country, but we have a lot of good tracks. We have a great training ground. We have, a lot of experienced riders that are willing to help. And I always tell everyone's so quick to rush overseas and race. And I always say, we have very good facilities here to improve at a lot lower cost. Mm-hmm. And try and be the best you can be here first and then head off.
I'd love to make it down there. Never been to Australia or New Zealand. I gotta come down there. Shane tells me about the e-bike in it, and he's like, it's incredible. So
yeah, you would like that. That's for sure.
I'd love to do it. Fly Racing RacerX podcast with Josh Coppins. I might need your help one day, Josh, just to build this bridge with BT because he is not a fan.
Yeah, I'll sort that out. Don't worry about it.
He is not a fan. I don't know. I think he was angry about maybe the way I covered him when he was injured all the time, or I don't really know.
Yeah.
But not
yeah,
happy.
Yeah, BT. I think he was. But you got to understand, when a guy's putting his heart and soul into it and he's injured, it leaves a bit of a chip on his shoulder. I'm pretty sure we can smooth that out, Steve.
To try to work it out. Hey, man, thanks for the time. Always great to catch up with you. I'm glad you're doing well, and things look from the outside, things seem like they're really working for you with the team and yourself, and you've always been the nicest guy to talk to when you were racing. Or whatever, man. I've always enjoyed our conversation. So thank you very much.
No, thank you. And keep up the good shows, and looking forward to more great content, and hopefully see you at a race sometime soon.
Sounds good, Josh. Thanks for the time, man.
Cheers, Steve. Bye.
Bye.
This has been the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show, presented by Maxxis Tires, Renthal, Motorsport.com, and Kuba Links on RacerXOnline.com. Thanks for listening and supporting our partners. Don't change the air. Don't change the air.